So I want to speak this morning about this passage from 2 Corinthians. St. Paul is speaking to the Corinthians, and think of Corinth as a place where there is, it's a cosmopolitan city. Many, many different faiths are there, different cultures. They speak different languages. They have to deal with the Romans in their own way. There are trade agreements, much as today. It's a cosmopolitan city. And there's a lot of difficulty there as well. He speaks to them forthrightly. And here in this passage, he describes the fact that he could, in fact, boast. He could boast of a history, an experience that he had of where he received knowledge of God and God's truth. And he could talk about it. Do you know what it's like to be at a dinner party with someone who tells you about the unbelievably fantastic time that they did something 20 years ago? The baseball that they hit out of the park? And if you're married to them, and this is the seventh time that you've heard that story, I'm just saying. So he doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to boast, even though he mentions to us, however, it was fantastic what happened to me. But he says that he wants them to see the power of God in their experience of being with him now. He says, I could tell you about that, but I want to tell you, but I want you to see the power of God now in me. And then he goes to an interesting place. He says that God's power is made perfect in weakness. He says that when God spoke to him during this experience he had of God, God said that his grace was sufficient and that his power was made perfect in weakness. Now, St. Paul says that a weakness was given to him, and there's been a lot of speculation about what that weakness is. I don't think we have any idea. But apparently it was something that you could see if you were with him, know about. And one of the terrible things about getting older, and certainly also about being a minister, is that you begin to realize that people actually do see your weaknesses. They are quite familiar with them. By the time you usually publicly admit to a failing, it's way after everybody else knows that you have it. Right? So he says he appealed to God to have this weakness removed. Well, of course he did. Of course we all do. But God wouldn't do it because God wanted him to be present with the people with his weakness, not standing in his way. This is an existential statement. The idea is to be able to look at something which appears to lack what's needed, but even while seeing it lack what's needed, to be astounded at how full you are. This is a moment of great grace. When we look at something which ought to disappoint us, but it doesn't disappoint us at all. I always find this grace, especially in married people when they're getting married. They just adore each other. And of course, things that will ultimately drive them crazy. Don't drive them crazy right then. Oh, that lovely way that you leave your clothes all over the place. You could see them 10 years later saying, you really need to stop it. But when they're madly in love, that's just not what they see. The power of the love is so great that it overcomes whatever weakness is there. In fact, it doesn't just overcome it. They actually look at the weakness and see love, palpable love, right in that place. And that's what St. Paul is talking about here. He's talking about power in weakness. Now, when I was fired in New York, we wound up in an apartment in Jersey City. And I remember that when the moving men moved us there, This is the first time I realized what was happening to us in a real sense, because the moving men felt incredibly sorry for me. I mean, they looked at me like I was pitiful, but they'd been at the fancy place, and now they were at the not fancy place. And as they were carrying the furniture up, I just remember the fellow looking at me like, I don't know, like I was pathetic. I didn't know I was pathetic. So I had grown up with a washing machine and a dryer in the house. Where we were, that we didn't have that, but we had a red wagon. So Hannah and I piled the dirty laundry, put it in the red wagon. Now, the problem was that this apartment was up a number of stories, so we had to get the wagon down the stories, and then we wheeled the wagon to the washateria. And at the washateria, we put all the money in the machines to wash the clothes. I want you to know that I look back on my experience with my daughter. That is one of the happiest times I ever had with her. We would count the clothes and fold them together. We would watch the machines go round and round. We would listen to the coins as they dropped in the machine. What might have seemed pitiful to others was certainly a joy in our life. I look at that as a time when God broke through in a powerful way, made us all stronger, made us stronger as a family. Now, some would say, where is justice? Don't you look at weakness as strength? What about justice? I suppose you could look at the cross that way. You could say, why the cross? Or you could say, the cross, and then the resurrection right beside it. I wonder that. You know, this is a deep truth, that what we resist persists, that what we fight against becomes even stronger in our fighting. But what we let go of, what is a weakness, what we acknowledge as a weakness, becomes strength in us. Sometimes even the strength to do what we never even asked for or imagined. Recently, I got a letter, an email from a woman who is a chaplain. And she's a chaplain in a prison. And she wrote to me about a prisoner who names herself Amy, who may be released this month with a clemency package, or may need to serve her sentence till 2032. She's in for life. She's talking here in her poem about forgiveness. And she says, so as I see it, there is no choice. Forgiveness just is a matter of me. And if it truly is a part of my matter, then naturally, forgiveness just is. It's not something to strive for, nor something unable to do. It's a matter of knowing. It's a natural condition of heart. So let it be and let it do, the natural state of forgiving. There she is in prison, with food we wouldn't want to eat, with bars that go clink and smells that must be sometimes unimaginably disgusting, right? Who is freer? Who has freedom? She has found deep freedom in her heart. Maybe the word to us really is, we are not our weakness. Our weakness stands beside us, but it doesn't declare who we are. And the power we have inside comes from God's love for us. Boy, don't we like to name people by their weakness. You are what? Pitiful for what reason? You are much to be pitied for what reason? But we are not our weakness. We are strong and loved by God entirely. And our weakness is simply an opportunity for us to see something new, experience something with our whole heart. I know I've mentioned this before, and I just can't help but conclude with it. This movie, I really hope you'll see by where Mr. Rogers, the Mr. Rogers movie, Won't You Be My Neighbor? It's still playing in the movie houses. In one scene, he stands next to a boy who is in a wheelchair and will be in a wheelchair clearly for life. And they sing together a song. And it's the song we all know from Mr. Rogers, but I think maybe it says this bit of knowledge from St. Paul better than anything. He sings, "It's you I like. It's not the things you wear. It's not the way you do your hair, but it's you I like. The way you are right now, the way deep down inside you. Not the things that hide you. Not your," and they say, "wheelchair. They're just beside you. But it's you I like." May God's great power be manifest in every area of your weakness this very day. Amen.